I came across a quote recently that I can't get out of my head. You know, one of those things you read and you'd like to set it aside and forget about it. But this is one of those quotes that has really just stood out and caused me to think a lot. I've included it there. It's from a lady by the name of Annie Dillard. And as you can see, it goes, "How we live our days is how we live our lives." Again, I've just had trouble getting that out of my head because I thought that's really true. How we live our days is how we live our lives. I don't know about you, but I like to think in kind of grandiose terms about my life in the big sense and the general sense and all the great things. And yet, as I thought about that statement, I thought about, you know, my life really is the essence of how I live my days. And if you stop and think about that for a little bit, what do your days consist of? What do my days consist of? They don't necessarily consist of all those grandiose things I dream about and hope about. There's some rather mundane things and some things that perhaps really aren't making all that much difference. And so, again, this statement's kind of just stopped me in my tracks and caused me to think about my days and ultimately my life. Now, I think that most of us realize that there's a large chunk of our lives that's pretty much locked in for us. Those working jobs, you're locked into pretty much 8 hours or so of spending time at work doing certain things that somebody else is telling you to do. And so there's not a lot to be done with that. But there is the negotiable time in life, the discretionary time in life that probably is the real indicator. What do we do with the time that's really ours that we can do whatever we want to do with? There, I think, is where the essence of life and our days really, really is. I found some statistics from the Department of Labor, and these are 2008 statistics, so they're fairly current. And I thought, these are good to consider. This is just kind of a snapshot of Americans, and we probably very well identify with these things. This is how, in general, we spend our time. First of all, household activities. You know those things that we really got to do around the house? Not surprising, women spend more time doing them than men. 2.6 hours a day. Men spend an average of 2 hours. Yeah. Educational activities. Some are trying to advance their education and all, and those who attended class on a weekday spend an average of 5.3 hours doing so. And those who did homework and research on a weekday spent 2.7 hours in such activities. Nearly everyone age 15 or over engages in some form of leisure activity like watching TV, socializing, and exercising. Here's the kicker. We're going to come back to it. Watching TV was the leisure activity that occupied the most time, accounting for about half of leisure time, on average for both men and women. Socializing, visiting with friends, or attending or hosting social events was the next most common leisure activity, accounting for about 3/4 of an hour per day. Sports, exercise, recreation. Men spend an average of 1.9 hours, women an average of 1.3 hours. Adults age 75 and over spent 7.6 hours engaged in leisure activities. 25 to 44-year-olds spend just over 4 hours doing those things. Those aged 75 and over spent 1.2 hours reading per weekday and 17 minutes playing games or using a computer for leisure. Those ages 15 to 19 read an average of 10 minutes per weekend day. Weekend day, not weekday. Spending an average of 1 hour playing games or using the computer for leisure. Adults with children under the age of 6 spend an average of 2 hours a day providing primary child care. Adults with children ages 6 to 17 spent 47 minutes per day in primary child care. Again, those are just a few statistics. They may not mean a whole lot, but you think about it, it is, again, a snapshot of how Americans spend their time. Again, not terribly surprising, the one that I zero in the most and we'll come back to again is that we spend large chunks of discretionary time in front of the television. Tell me something I didn't know. Most of you are saying, of course, that's the case. But again, think about that being a primary description of how we live our lives. How we live our days is how we live our lives. Granted, the Department of Labor didn't set down and measure those Christian pursuits that are important parts of our lives. And so that survey doesn't reflect how much time as Christians we spend in Bible study and prayer, outreach and service, and those kinds of things. We have to be honest with ourselves and consider those things. How much time do I spend every day in Bible study? How much time do I spend in prayer? How much time in Christian service and those kinds of things? And again, think about it in terms of that statement, how we live our days is how we live our lives. A very accurate gauge of our Christian commitment, again, is how we spend our days. Don't think about it in general as your life, like I like to do. Again, that statement brings back a reality check. Not those great things overall in my lifetime, but how I spend my day. How much of my day am I spending in those kinds of things? That's the real gauge of our Christian lives. I'd like you to turn in your Bibles to Romans chapter 12. At two, I think, of the most challenging verses anywhere in the Bible, two very important verses to look at today. Two verses probably most of us in this room are very, very familiar with, but verses that challenge us as we talk today about commitment and being fully alive in our commitment. The Apostle Paul writes and says, "Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God. The basis for the appeal is the mercies of God. God who has forgiven all sin. God who has wiped the slate clean for those of us who came in faith through His Son Jesus Christ. Based upon the mercies of God, Paul makes this appeal that we would present our bodies as a living and a holy sacrifice. The phrase to notice, living sacrifice. I've read that I don't know how many different times. But I really paused and thought a lot about that phrase, living sacrifice. And again, that's central in talking today about being fully alive in our commitment. As I thought about the phrase living sacrifice, I thought, you know, that's an oxymoron. You know, it really sounds like one. Because living and sacrificing just don't really go together. You know, you read back in the Old Testament, what did they have to do for sin? They had to bring the spotless animal out of the flock. They had to bring that in. And you didn't just offer it on the altar and bless it and send it on its way. No, it died. It died for sin. And so sacrifice, in so many different times God has described the kinds of sacrifice for the various types of sin, it pretty much always involved death of an animal. And you think about the ultimate sacrifice, our Lord Jesus Christ. I was thinking Hebrews 10, verse 12 says of Him that He, having offered one sacrifice for sins for all time, sat down at the right hand of God. Again, for Jesus, no different than the animals. He didn't just go and present Himself and say, I'm offering myself for sacrifice, a blessing set over Him, and He went on His way. We all know full well the uncomfortable truth is that Jesus, the sinless Son of God, died. And so sacrifice for Him meant death. A death on behalf of us. So, again, when I think of a phrase like living sacrifice, it really sounds like an oxymoron. Doesn't make sense. A sacrifice dies, and so we're called by the mercies of God to be living sacrifices. And again, I guess the more I thought about that, the more I had trouble getting my mind around it, because the two are mutually exclusive. Living and sacrifice just don't go hand in hand, it would seem. But that's what we're called to be living sacrifices. And one of the challenges to being a living sacrifice, as someone has said, the problem with living sacrifices is that they sometimes crawl off the altar. That's right. Those animals that were offered once and for all for sin, they killed. They didn't have any choice in it. They didn't have any choice in being there, but they're killed. They're not going anywhere. They're dead. That's it. It's over for them. If we're called to be living sacrifices, that's what's most challenging, is that means moment by moment, day by day, year after year, we make a choice that we lay our lives on the altar, but the fact that we're alive means we got a choice to crawl off, don't we? I can decide right now, I want to be a sacrifice. I'm so in touch with the mercies of God, I want to give my life, I want to be fully surrendered to the Lord. That's not that big of a deal for Him to ask that of me. But in the next moment, I might say, you know, I'm not sure I really want to do that. I can crawl off the altar. So if we are called to be living sacrifices, that's almost more difficult because it's not a one-time choice. It's an ongoing choice, moment by moment. And so that's what we're called to be, is living sacrifices. One of the best definitions of a living sacrifice, in case we wonder what's that really about, Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, is a verse that probably gives us that definition. What does it really mean to be a living sacrifice? Paul says it well. He says, I have been crucified with Christ. Okay, that sounds like sacrifice, all right, dying. I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself up for me. I live by faith with the Son of God living in me. And I noticed that, who loved me and gave Himself up for me. John was just talking about that in the evangelism challenge. Loving, that's not necessarily those warm feelings within. You know, we don't necessarily like people that we love. But, you know, love involves an action, doing something on behalf of people that may not treat us well. That's the ultimate with Jesus. He may not necessarily have liked us because we've gone against everything He's about. But He gave Himself as an act of love because God called Him to do so. And so He has given the ultimate measure of love by sacrificing Himself. And so now by faith, if I am going to be a living sacrifice, I kill the old self. My desires, my old person is dead. I've been crucified on the cross. I nailed the old self up on the cross. So therefore, then, I'm not the one who lives anymore. I turned it all over. I killed it, I turned it over, it's not mine anymore. This life now belongs to Christ who lives within me. And so this life I now live in the flesh, I'm living it by faith in the Son of God. I'm letting Him be preeminent in my life if I'm a living sacrifice. Again, this is, I think, the best definition of all. I have set aside my old self. I've set aside my desires, my agenda. I've set it aside, and so Christ lives within me. And yet, even in saying that, I think we know how hard that is. I still want to do what I want to do. The old self, even though it's dead in some sense, it still has a way of resurrecting itself, and so it seems to still be alive more than I ever want. But so much as I follow this, so much as I am a living sacrifice, so much as I kill the old self and let Christ be raised up in my life, I'm never more fully alive than when I am dead to myself and alive to Christ. I believe that to be so true. With all my heart, I believe that's to be true. That is the irony of the Christian life. When I am truly dead, that's when I'm the most alive. When I am the most committed, that's when I'm the most alive. And so there's never more real life within me than being dead to self and alive to Christ. And I'm reminded of His words, John 10, verse 10. We're going to talk about that probably every week as we talk about these topics. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. That's why we can say that when I'm dead to self, when Christ is most fully alive within me, I've got life like I've never had it before. I've got abundant life. I've got a foretaste of the ultimate life I will have in the kingdom of God. I'm experiencing that in my life now, and I'm alive more than I possibly could be if my old self was still alive. I thought about the life of Christ within and what Christ's life really does in our lives. And I went back to His earthly ministry. And there's one good summation in Luke chapter 7, verse 22. John the Baptist, who testified, was the forerunner of Christ, who's in prison, and he's wanting, I guess, a final affirmation. He sends his disciples to Christ and says, are you the one to come, or do we look for someone else? And this is Jesus' answer to them. And I think it is so instructive for us. He says, go and report to John what you have seen and heard. All right, here's what you've seen and heard. The blind receive sight. The lame walk. The lepers are cleansed and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up and the poor have the gospel preached to them. Fantastic summation of the work of Christ. That's exactly what he was doing. And so he says, that's the report to give back to John. Notice, these are the things the Son of Man is doing, and is that not proof that he is the Son of Man, the Son of God? You know, it's true. Everywhere Jesus went, those people who were broken or ill were made well. Indeed, the blind were given sight. Those that were lame were allowed to walk. Those that were lepers were made cleansed. And the deaf were able to hear. The dead even were raised up. All those miraculous things, all those things that Jesus did, even the gospel being preached to the poor. In all those things, why was it that Jesus was a miracle man? He was, of course, demonstrating the great message he had, and we've talked about that. But again, I think about Jesus doing those things and just examining those things for themselves and thinking about Jesus saying to us, I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly. If he did those things to those people then, what is he doing in our lives today? You know, think about that. That same power, that same presence, it is within us. And so if I have died to myself and Christ is in me, I'm drawn back to the miracle worker who walked the earth 2,000 years ago. That same Christ is now within, and that life is bubbling up within me. And we're not going to get into this whole thing about physical healing, because that certainly can be a part of it, but there's more than that. Maybe Christ within brings those things to bear in our lives, but most assuredly what he brings to bear in our lives is the spiritual realm of that. Because every one of us can say in our old self that we were blind, that we were unable to walk, that we were unable to hear, that he's brought about hearing and sight. He's made brought about wholeness in all of those areas. He continually is doing those things in our lives right now. And I don't know, I guess I just paused and thought about that in a little different light than maybe I've thought about it before. If I have died to myself, if I've crucified the old self, if Christ is within, this is the same Christ who did those things, who's available to do things like that in my life today, yours and my lives today. And so to be really alive, I mean, the possibilities are phenomenal, aren't they? I mean, those things are within grasp. They are within us. And so we have the opportunity to be more alive than we have ever been before. So indeed, to be a living sacrifice, Christ makes us fully alive. He's given us life like we've never known it before. But the other half of that equation in Romans 12, to be living sacrifices, the living part he gives us, the sacrifice part, now that's a little more difficult. That falls to us largely, if we are going to be sacrifices. And what exactly does that mean? Romans 12 told us a couple of things. To be a sacrifice involves something to do with our bodies, a presentation of our bodies. Present your bodies. So when I read that, it says it's not just a mental choice. To be a living sacrifice doesn't just mean I've turned my brain over and I'm going to think a certain way. I've got certain facts in my head. That's part of it, but that's certainly not all of it. I'm to present my body as this business of being a sacrifice. And so more than a mental choice, it involves lifestyle. It means I go deliberately in a certain direction, do certain things and don't do certain things. So that is a big part of it. And so it involves what I do as well as what I think. But he also talks about mental renewal in these verses. He says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The two go hand in hand. I can't offer my body as a living sacrifice if my mind is not, first of all, transformed. And again, I paused to think a lot more about that recently. How very, very important it is to think differently, to be transformed mentally. And I think that is ultimately where the real battle is, if you stop and think about it. We put a lot of emphasis on saying Christians should do certain things, Christians should not do certain things. But why that comes about? It comes about because of the renewing of the mind, and therein is where the great battle is. It is an absolute that how we think is how we live. We're probably very familiar with Proverbs 23, verse 7. For as a man thinks within himself, so he is. And that is so true. How we think is how we are, right? A lot of us are down on ourselves mentally. You know, it's been said we play tapes in our heads. And we say certain things about ourselves all the time, don't we? We're either knocking ourselves down or we're building ourselves up, but we're saying things constantly in our head. We are told certain things, we believe certain things, and that defines our outlook on life. How we think does determine how we live. And again, I take it back to that statement. How we live our days is how we live our lives. What our mind says about what we will do today really overall influences how we live our life in general. So, the key thing is, what is most influencing our thinking, which ultimately is influencing our living? Here's one that's really tough for me to come to terms with. We talked about it a little bit ago, but I've had to realize this is much more true in my life than I want to admit, and that is the fact that television is probably the major force influencing my thinking, as it probably is most of us in this room. Because if the Department of Labor is right, if we are spending about half of our leisure discretionary time in front of the tube, guess who's got the most influence over our lives? I thought about my time spent recently. And I like to think of myself as a person of the Word and as a person of prayer, and I devote myself to those things. But when I think about how much time I deliberately sit down and spend in front of the television, you know what? There's more time that's being spent there than is being spent discretionary with the Word and prayer. And you know, it's a balance. You know, you put the weights in the balance. Which one's the heaviest? And I think, to be very, very honest, television likely is weighing the heaviest and is the greatest influencer in most of our lives. Again, whatever we give ear to influences our thinking and ultimately influences our living. We cannot determine to live a certain way all the while that something else is influencing our mind. No, it flows right on through. Whatever touches our mind, whatever has an impact on our mind, ultimately flows out and influences our living. Jesus said that. A person's not defiled by the kinds of food that they take in, but what comes out of the heart. So whatever we've been mentally exposed to, that's, if it's something negative, that's the defiling thing. Because that comes out in certain lifestyle characteristics. And again, I've thought a lot about those things that influence my mind and our minds. And I've lately thought a lot about the tremendous shift in the last, say, 20, maybe not even that far back, maybe the last 10 to 20 years. What has changed in lifestyle? And I think of things that have influenced me. And technology has been a big deal. The computer, the internet in particular, and cell phones and text messaging, and of course television has been a constant through all of that, but there's been a huge shift with technology that's changed our activities. You know, 10, 15 years ago, checking email, what's that all about? You know, probably we didn't know much about it or didn't do much with it. We spent a lot of time in those kinds of things. I'm not standing up here and saying they're wrong or they're bad, but I'm just thinking, as far as being aware of the influence of the mind that affects living, those things have crept in and increased greatly in all of our lives. And of course, they are having an impact upon how we live our lives. Again, this thing about being fully alive in our commitment, I just realized with so much greater clarity, it truly begins with mental renewal. And being very cautious, being very careful about the food that we serve to our minds. The psalmist says in Psalm 101, verse 3, I will set no worthless thing before my eyes. That's a tough one. Because I look at television, the things that I do, that's not too bad, is often a phrase that I find myself using. I'm sure you do as well. And yet things are either worthwhile or worthless, pretty much. They either build up or they tear down. There's really no neutral territory, but it's so easy to think that there are some things that can just kind of be neutral. I'm kicking my brain in neutral. You know, I'm going to veg out on the couch and just sort of let things happen. Whatever's happening, whatever's coming in through the eyes and into the brain, it's either making me a better Christian or it's drawing me further away. I know I'm picking on television a lot, but I found this quote in a secular magazine. That's why I wanted to share it with you. Because this isn't something from a Christian publication. This is out of a secular magazine, and the writer says, "I killed my roommate. Believe me, it was justifiable homicide. This low life never helped me with the rent, but constantly nagged me to buy all kinds of expensive junk I didn't need." The writer says TV is infinitely more insidious and corrosive than any human being. It hypnotizes you into stupidity, then softly unhooks your will, replacing it with its own. I thought, you know, I kind of have to agree with that. That's kind of what it does. And again, I know I'm picking on television a lot, but it is probably the number one influencer in our lives if we really took a look at how we spend our time. The writer of that article advocated a 2-week ban on television. I'm thinking about it. Jill and I have talked about it. I don't really want to do it, but I'm thinking about it. Because I think it's for my own good. I was sitting last evening thinking, well, we had the TV off for a good chunk of the evening. We watched the ball game, okay? Now, sports is going to be the challenge. Can I not watch baseball? I don't know. But anyway, I was like, what do I do with my time? You know, it's such a part of lifestyle. What do I do if the television's not on? I could read, but that could write. I definitely need to do more of that. But maybe communicate better. I'm just thinking there's a lot of things I could do, but it's kind of scary because that's just a security blanket that's always there. And yet I'm thinking about that 2-week ban, TV for a year from their house, and a high percentage that did it never went back. Wow, I don't know about that, but I may have to give it some thought. I've been wanting to buy a nice flat-screen TV, but now I'm thinking maybe I have no business doing that. If I'm going to ban TV, maybe I don't need the thing in the first place. So anyway, I know this is personal, but again, it gets down to the mind and what we're feeding our mind. And again, I know for myself, too much time, too much influence from a force that really does not support what I believe. If you get right down to it, what you're getting from television is not supporting what you believe in the Christian life. So it really, when we're honest, it runs contrary to what we're ultimately about. We probably know that the best biblical prescription for mental commitment is found in Philippians 4:8. The Apostle Paul says, "Finally, brethren, whatever's true and honorable and right and pure and lovely, of good repute, if there's anything of excellence, anything worthy of praise, dwell or think on these things." Some of the best mental health advice ever given. Paul was inspired to say, make sure you focus on those things that ultimately are good. Those things that are consistent with Christian living, consistent with Christ and Scripture and all of that. Dwell, think on those things. Occupy your mind with those things. And again, how we think is how we live. And so what Paul says is just doubly important. Joshua, in chapter 24, verse 15, issued a call to commitment to the people of Israel. And he said very simply, "Choose for yourselves today whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." I think from time to time we need to come back to that idea of a decisive commitment such as that. Choose today. It's easy to say, I chose in 1973 that I would give my life to Christ. Well, I made a decision then, but I need periodically to draw the line and choose and say, all right, today, the line is drawn in the sand. I need to choose today. I've been sliding and I need to choose today that I will really serve the Lord, not just in words, but that my lifestyle will reflect it. Again, for me, this is very personal. If I am choosing this day to serve the Lord, this is one choice I may very well have to make. I got a pretty good idea I have to, and that is to cut out an area of entertainment that occupies way too much time. I need to make a choice, and that is walking that decision. I'm sure there's other things along with it, but I know that's kind of front and center as far as a decision to truly serve the Lord. A friend wrote on Facebook, see, I spend time on the internet, on Facebook, the popular site, and made a statement that I thought was good and well worth sharing. This person says, "I've been finding and enjoying great audio and video lessons to listen to as I work. It's much better than having the television on." Romans 12:2, renewing my mind and quenching a thirst all at the same time. Here's someone apparently on the same page in terms of that. I want to listen to some Christian lessons and sermons. I want to watch those. I want to occupy my mind as I go about my housework with those things that are much better than the television that's so easy to have turned on. And again, I related that as I read that. It was kind of timely. I think I read that a couple of days ago. I thought, okay, maybe that's God's way of saying concerning this decision in my own life. Here's somebody else with the same thing. I need to make a choice in this area if I'm going to win the battle for my mind and ultimately the battle for my life to be able to walk in a way that is pleasing to the Lord. Maybe your decision's not the same one as mine. I don't want to lay a guilt trip on anybody here, but I do want you to think about one action step that will help you in your mental commitment to the Lord. If we are to be living sacrifices, and the way to do that is renewing our mind so that we think right in order to live right, what's one thing? Maybe you've got to do the same thing I think I got to do, but maybe there's something else. But I think before we walk away from the topic and the text, we need to consider that one action step. What's that one thing? Maybe it doesn't hit you right now, maybe this afternoon or over lunch or whatever, but that one thing that will help you to make that mental commitment to really be alive and to be a sacrifice as the Lord has called you. I want to challenge you to do that. One word, one phrase, one step that's important to do to really make this work.